It's ROI, right? It's how are you measuring success? And how are you telling your clients or potential clients even that they can, what metrics they should be measuring your success by, right? What will, if they invest in your partnership, what will they see as a return?
Hey, LJ, how many talks at conferences have you given on AI this year?
Oh my goodness. I actually have no idea. It's been so many.
Oh God. And how many times have you taught this AI to supercharge your desk course already?
Over 2 dozen times now.
2 dozen? God, you were at 8 the last time I asked you, like a month ago. Good Lord.
I know. It has been exceedingly popular and it's gotten rave reviews. So we're super excited about what I think is going to be the leveling the playing field, the great equalizer is generative. And, you know, I've been quoted as saying, AI won't replace you, but someone that knows how to use it will. And so you need to get on it if you haven't.
That's right, guys. So check out the Supercharger Desk with AI that Lauren is teaching via Leap Consulting. And you can find her at Lauren at leapconsultingsolutions.com.
Due to the fact that I am opening the show today, because Rob has this full-on New Jersey accent going thick today. Good morning to our listeners. Welcome to the Why Are We podcast, where we're going to have coffee, we're going to talk.
I'm very Long Island of
Aaron
you.
Jones. How the hell are you?
How the hell are you, Rob? Welcome to our podcast today. It's Jersey
Guys,
Shore.
We got a wonderful show for you today. We're going to connect with my roots. We're going to have a guy from Jersey on, Mr. Adam Butera, Director of Product at Opus Match. Adam, how the hell are you?
Lovely to be here.
I appreciate you not mimicking our stupid accents.
I couldn't resist. It was just too much Jersey before we hopped on and got live.
Guys, I don't know if you know this, but I often refuse to say the letters ER in conjunction together. I usually just make them an AH.
Water. Water.
For instance,
would like
water.
To have some water.
Yeah.
And some butter.
I don't believe in ERs, guys. I don't know what to tell you. Anyway. Yeah, guys, we're super excited to have Adam on. Adam has been a friend for a number of years now before he joined forces with the AI nerds, the matching nerds over at Opus Match. So shout out to some of our favorite nerds over there.
Yep.
Shout out to our friendship. Appreciate you guys over the years. Awesome friends, awesome colleagues.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you were doing some great stuff over at your previous staffing company and that lead health travel place, some good people over there as well. So we like hanging out with good people. We do have as much as possible, and we do enforce the no dick rule in our lives. So if you're going to be a dick, we're going to remove you from our lives pretty quickly. as fast as possible.
We have an aversion. It's an allergy.
We're not a big fan of that. So we like good people. And you definitely are one of them, but I just figured it'd be funny, you know, throw that out there today live and on the show. Let's get to know Adam.
All right.
So Adam, you want to go first, Lauren? Okay.
Yes. Adam, give us a book or podcast recommendation. Something that you're reading and or listening to right now that you're super into.
That's a good one. So what I'm listening to right now, actually a podcast, is a book called How to Be a Modern Samurai. just what my most recent that I picked up. A recommendation that I recently reread that I would highly recommend to everybody is a book called Switch. It's a really great book about how to kind of organize and think through change management.
Change
my perspective on how it should be done and the, you know, simple ways that we can trick our brains or help trick other people's brains and coach them towards, you know, better processes. So I'd highly recommend that one. I just recently reread that.
Ooh, I love it. I want to send me the link for Modern Samurai though.
Will do.
That's been
a fun one. Yeah. It's a little
more fun, I'm sure.
More leisure. Yeah. That's like my plain read.
Is it like a tongue in cheek kind of funny?
It's actually more of a like compilation of all of these Japanese principles and histories all compiled together in a, you know, applied to modern kind of topics and worldviews, but it's done in a way that is very high level, right? So it does get granular with some details, but for the most part, it's fairly high level. So I've always just been interested in Japanese culture. And so it's aligned with, again, more of a leisure.
It's not recommending like Sapporo?
No, not. But it does recommend Japanese gardening.
Ooh, I like that.
Oh, I'm down for that.
All right.
But I will say this. I had the awesome opportunity of watching Dan Heath speak. And he's pretty flippin' amazing. Flippin' amazing. That brother duo and their books, I think, are phenomenal. I think I've read every single one of them. I'd be surprised if I've missed one. So if you haven't done Upstream or The Power of Moments, they're pretty awesome. If you like Switch, you're gonna love the other one. Decisive, like they're really good writers, but B, they've just put out some tremendous content.
Like, yeah, it's hard not to at least have one or two of their books on your reading list, past or future, right? Yeah.
Yes. I do have a signed copy of Switch. Just going to say that.
That's amazing. Now I'm super jealous if I wasn't already.
Just to be clear, I brought up a childish book and Lauren brought up the adult book to highlight. I just gave you, just to kind of give you our personalities here. Adam, I'm going to ask the hard one first. Greatest failure in your career so far?
Oh.
We've reduced him to silence.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about kind of overall, I think my greatest failure in my career so far was taking a job that required me to do, this is going to sound horrible, but it's a choice I made and it's a bad one in hindsight. Really, it should have been right in front of me, was taking a job with a company that was requiring me to do a 30-day on-site training while my wife was pregnant with our second child. Ooh. And the training was out in California, and we live in Atlanta now. So it was just a horrible decision of mine to go and do that. I have the most incredible wife that would even say, go do it, take advantage of the opportunity. But it was just a terrible mistake to even consider.
I mean, so I'm leaving for
professionally,
like,
probably the worst thing I've done.
I'm leaving for 12 days and I feel bad, but it's mostly because there's multiple things on the West Coast that I don't feel like flying 4 hours home for.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that I like to take advantage of good opportunities that are in front of me, right? And not let obstacles get in the way, or kind of overthinking them if I really feel like this could lead to better things.
Right.
And sort of, you know, not really risk averse. And so I did take advantage of something, but again, this should have been not even on the table as a consideration given my wife's situation.
Right.
So I would say but
it's lesson learned. Lesson
yes,
learned.
Yes. Again, shouldn't have had to be learned in hindsight, but that was probably my worst professional mistake. Other than that, right, I continue to make mistakes. I continue to make mistakes all the time in my professional career. Rob, honestly, I think that's a big part of it, is that whole failing forward philosophy, right? Making mistakes, being self-aware enough to know, and being...
I love making mistakes. I usually learn a lot.
Me too. Me too. So hopefully I'll probably make some more today.
No worries. First podcast. We're,
that's right.
That's right.
I'm happy to have you make mistakes with us, because I can edit them out. Don't you worry.
Yeah, bringing up that I fail at a lot of things on a podcast, probably another mistake that I'll regret.
Not at all.
I
call myself the chief failure officer. I am here for failure. It teaches you more than oftentimes winning does. So
the only thing you need to be aware of is if your CFO is the chief failure officer. That kind of person shouldn't be the chief failure officer.
That is a bad idea. You're 100% right.
All right. 100% right all the time. 50% of the time. All right, Adam or Lauren, go ahead into the next one.
All right. So now let's talk about your greatest achievement. Well, let's hear about the good stuff.
You can say being on this podcast.
No, yes. You can't.
You know, the easy answer is being on this podcast.
Yeah,
taking advantage of this opportunity, right? You dangled and I had to jump on it.
I appreciate that.
I think, you know, probably most recently, it's been what I've accomplished here at Opus Match, you know, kind of shamelessly plucking some of the work that we did here. But, you know, in the 6 months that I was here initially, I just passed my 1-year anniversary, but in the 6 months I was here initially, we proposed and launched a proof of concept in 6 short months for productizing some things that we were doing that are hitting the market with a lot of big strides and some really interested parties and lots of contracts signed already for it. So it's been successful. So I'm pretty proud of that, that we were able to do that in a short period of time and have some proven success and some market fit there for it.
That's exciting. Awesome. That's really exciting.
All right. We'll go with the, most controversial question.
It's so divisive.
Adam, are you a dog or a cat person?
I'm a dog person.
Hey!
A couple minutes ago, there was one of my two dogs sitting on the couch back there earlier. But yeah,
Lauren,
mainly just because my wife and one of my son are actually allergic to cats. Like, even if I wanted a cat, I couldn't have one.
There you go.
But I am a dog person.
There was a fearless cat facing down Layla today on our walk. And I really want Layla to like meet a cat up close and personal and get like smacked upside the head for being aggressive. But I didn't know if the cat was declawed. So I'm like looking for a cat that I know is declawed that will just beat my dog's ass for a second so she stops barking at cats.
They're out there.
I know.
They're out there.
They're out there for sure. And they're just waiting to slap your dog, I promise you.
I'm sure. Our friend's dog, our friend's cat, and they have like a little like Havanese. And like the cat gets on its back legs and goes, like smacks the dog in the face when it gets too close just to mess with it. It's so funny to watch. So anyway, no issues with cats, but I'm definitely a dog person.
No, I don't either. I mean, I've actually had some really great experiences with friends that have had cats and really enjoy cats. I do. I would probably end up having one. My daughter would love to have a cat. It's her dream is to have a cat. If my son and wife were allergic, we'd probably have one.
So just so you know, Lauren shared a photo of her pet raccoon Nugget in a tree the other day. In her yard, and it was like, that's where raccoons belong. And then my brain was like, oh, this is Nugget, her pet. I was like, that makes
sense. Pet raccoon? I need to hear more about that.
So we are wildlife. We are wildlife rehabbers. So. Yes. So.
Climbing trees.
Yes. Climbing trees. We got to get their muscles big and strong and, you know, all that good stuff. So. Yeah, they have tree climbing time and then they come back for dinner and, you know, totally
normal.
They have
indoor sleeping quarters?
Do you make
sleeping outside?
That we have a big, big, you know, 30-foot place for them outside.
Lauren lives on a farm.
Yeah.
You know.
With a...
All right. Adam.
Yes. Yeah,
she's got room. So guys, Adam's been in the industry for a while, obviously building product for the industry. When he wasn't building product at Opus, he was building the part of the tech stack over at a travel nursing firm. So very aware. He worked at Sense as well. So been in the industry, been having these conversations. So we wanted to pick his brain about, Lauren and I's basically we're going to focus like the whole conversation on optimization, but I want to be a little fun here. And I want to kick off like the serious part of this conversation by something that Adam and Lauren, like Lauren says this a lot. I don't know if you've listened to the podcast for a while, Lauren loves to ask, when did our customers, like our staffing customers, start to check our homework?
Uh-huh.
And the prep call, Lauren and Adam had a field day just kind of like being upset about this. So in the effort to start this with the emotional topic for Lauren and Adam, I want to start there today. So Adam, would you like to expand a little bit about what we mean by checking our work and then be as emotional as possible about it?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's ROI, right? It's how are you measuring success and how are you telling your clients or potential clients even that they can, what metrics they should be measuring your success by, right? If they invest in your partnership, what will they see as a return? What will they get as far as value is concerned? And to this point, everybody's checking our work more thoroughly now. And I think they should be. I really do. I think this is where we started to get into this a little bit, you know, on our last call, on our prep call was around, you know, I've certainly got feelings about how we should be doing this at an even more granular level than we've probably done previously, right? It's not as simple as I bought job ads from you and therefore I got this many applications, right? everybody wants to lead to placements, but how do you attribute those placement increases that you may see in volume to one particular vendor or multiple vendors if you've got brand new technology starting? And so I think this is where we start to get into an interesting conversation around how are you measuring success and what are those outcomes that you're seeing? How do they relate to your operational processes, business processes, right? So that's sure. My perspective on it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, the more we get technology engaged, right, the more we have to get pretty fastidious about the metrics that matter, right? We have to understand exactly the metrics that matter. Now, I get honked off because I think foundationally things started falling apart when we lost trust with a customer and they started checking. And what I mean by checking our work is, you know, submittals, right? We have a whole AI, we have a whole process, we have a whole VMS process. There's process for submittals. And I say, foundationally, why did we start doing submittals, right? Why did we do that? Why weren't we just, I remember the days because I'm that old, people, where a customer trusted me enough to send the best candidate that I thought would be aligned to their job opening, right? That's where that happened. Yeah. And so, but now, you know, things are different. We have more process in place. We have more rules. Customers want to see our top 10, 3 candidates, but then we get into what are the metrics that matter, and source matters a ton, particularly when you have tools like Mismatch or the Source Breakers of the world, right? They're there now. And now we have to ask ourselves, do I care where the candidate came from 2 years ago, or do I care where the candidate came from yesterday? I care where the candidate came from yesterday. Well, that means that we now have different metrics that we need to look at, as opposed to just historical source data. We're now looking at daily source data, and we need to attribute if Opus Match was the one that was able to go out and re-engage the candidate, bring them back into said circle, and then get them on a potential submittal and or opportunity. We need to be able to have metrics that matter as it pertains to the most recent source. And I think I see a lot of agencies doing that wrong, right? They're just looking at historical source data, taking the original source as the source. Now that's one. The submittal is, I still think that there's been a tremendous amount of trust lost between us and the customer. We've got to do something. And I think that's another metric that matters that gets out of whack that we talk about in the pre-call, which is, are you looking at your sub to interview ratio?
Yep. Sub to hire.
Sub to interview. Like if you're at an 11-1, you're submitting 11 people to a one interview, or you're submitting 30 people as in, you know, the VMS we know is a numbers game. And so you're just slapping candidates against the opportunity as fast as you can.
Anybody can just take them.
Yeah, it's just silliness. So I still think that we need tools that are going to help us whittle down the metrics that matter, help us get really good at reducing the transactions. So many transactions don't need to happen. The opportunity for the job and the candidate. And I think that's where there's so much noise and so much inefficiency.
Yeah. Yes.
Adam, I think, and I could do this, but do you want to give a little breakdown of what Lauren was talking about? When we say, oh, I lost my train of thought because I usually just answer the question, but now I'm forgetting what I want to say.
Answer.
Anyway, I had a couple things I wanted to clarify, right? Is like, you have sub to interview, mm-hmm. which you might have multiple issues there. One, you may not have qualified the job well enough.
That's right.
Right. That might be more for perm or for, you know, professional. If for like staffing, like commercial staffing, if you go to 11-1, I've never done commercial staffing, Lauren. So I can't imagine that person trusts you anymore. If you can't get.
Well, you know what? This actually ended up being a client issue, right? This idea, and we've just fed the demon, right? That more is better.
Yeah.
And you know, I've said this before, more is not better, better is better, right? It's coming back to your customer, remembering that we are consultants, and we come back to our customer and we say, look, the average candidate doesn't stay on the market for 30 days anymore, right? No. We need to make sure that we're making expeditious decisions, which means that we can't be looking at a dozen candidates. We need to be looking at the top three candidates in order for you to get the best candidate to match this job. We need to act with speed. And because it's a speed game today. And quite frankly, it doesn't matter what vertical you're in. It is still a speed game. Candidates want to know that they have control and they want to get their check they want to get their next check as soon as possible.
I remembered what I was going
to
ask Adam.
Oh my gosh. Give it to us, Rob. It's got to be good.
It wasn't that good. It was just, I completely forgot. So Adam, can you give some like a clarification on the source piece that mm-hmm. Lauren ran through? So like she was saying legacy source versus submission source. I know that's something
most recent.
Yeah. We want to get the legacy sources being, maybe you posted a job ad 2 years ago with a Monster, Indeed, CareerBuilder or somebody, and they applied to that job and ended up in your ATS, right? So that's that legacy source that she's referencing there. But then we've got all these incremental sources that are happening due to touch points, right? Whether it's an Opus match that's doing a match and presenting that internally to your team or presenting that externally to the candidate that they're responding to through an engagement, right? Or these passive engagements that you're setting up through a Born Automation or a Sense, right? To go out and engage with them. And now they're reinvigorated and they're moved back into the top of the funnel. All of these little incremental elements should be attributed as an additional source, right? We need to be tracking them. We need to be showing data around how they've moved the needle there for you. So you can fully understand that kind of holistic view and life cycle of each particular candidate to see who's making an impact and who's not.
Yeah.
And really judge them on how big the impact really is. What is moving the needle? Is it moving the needle far enough? Right?
Yeah, I think traditionally in, some of the ATSs that we work with, they don't do a great job of tracking all of that easily.
No.
And as we get to this phase where, it's kind of like that attribution of the current, the attribution of the most recent submission, right? So okay, you paid for this candidate to get in the database 2 years ago. It's in there. Now, how do we see all of the nurturing stuff that happened? And then how do we make sure that we know the triggered event, like the event that actually worked 18 months later, 24 months later, to actually get this person to the state of submittal? We need to see all of that. And we kind of need to see it in a holistic way. At least I think we do.
I want to be able to
question, by the way. She always has opinions.
I know. I know. You know what opinions are like, and everyone's got one. Yes, I have an opinion on this. I think, I totally lost my train of thought because the dogs.
Dogs are going crazy behind Lauren, guys.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
They're jumping up and down on beds.
I know.
They're having a great time back there.
Yeah, they are. So source data. Why is this so important? So we need to be able to establish ROI to the vendor. Every vendor that you have should be on a report card. And if you don't have a report card, we have one at Leap. But every vendor should be on a report card. And every vendor that you work with should be able to answer this question. What metric do you move? If they can't answer it, run. Run far away.
Time to ask Adam, do you guys have a report card or at least some ideas of what you... I think you know what you move, so it's not
you
really
know what hard. Metric you move.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah,
I mean it across the board in quite a few areas, but I think one of the biggest is that speed to submission.
Speed to submission, right?
Yeah, that's a big one.
So speed to submission, which equates to time to fill, impacts revenue. So, and it impacts quality. It could also potentially impact retention. So there are a number of metrics that you are applicable to your vendors. And if your vendor doesn't know what metric that they move, wrong vendor. And why do I say that? Why I know that's an aggressive stance to take because they need to be able to help
you
understand the return on investment. And what you want to establish is a proper return on investment for each vendor so that essentially each vendor is paying for itself. That's where you want to get with the vendors that you're managing, is that they are contributing to the organization in a monetary way, and that monetary way is trackable. And that's why yes. metrics matter so much with vendor partners.
I agree. I think the trackable piece too, that's where I would lean on your vendors as well. I wouldn't just want to know what metric are you going to move? What are you going to impact the most? But I'd also want to hear from them exactly how I'm supposed to track that. Mm-hmm. What things and tools do I need in place? What data do I need to be looking at, right? How often do I need to be looking at it to evaluate it so that I can make sure that they're providing the return that they are expected to provide, right?
And it's okay to challenge your vendor and say, yeah. can you help me? Can you help me report on that? Can you yes. help me see the ROI each month? Can you send me a report? Do you have a dashboard? Do you, you know, at the very minimum, I'd want to have a monthly report. But if they've got, you know, an engaged dashboard, that's even better.
Even better. Even better. And if you've got, you know, some certain BIs that you've built, some Power BI tools that you've built internally, I'm sure most of your vendors can probably even help you in those areas as well to give you some raw data around things like that to maybe expand even beyond what they've built out in a dashboard, right? Because you're doing a little bit of legwork for them to help prove out their own products, right? So yeah. I think it's another great opportunity you can capitalize on with them. Get collaborative. To your point, challenge them and get collaborative. Figure out what's the best way to measure this for that from their perspective, or better yet, in an ideal state, how would they like to be measured?
Yeah, I mean, that all comes back to this whole constant evaluation, right? What yeah. tools are helping you move the needle? And those are the ones that you want to prioritize continued investments in. And that's why it's so important. And I'll say this, and I know I've said it once, so I'll say it again. You have to have a regular cadence with your vendor partners. It's a partnership. It should be a long-term partnership. That's why it's so important that, you know, you understand who they are, the metric that they move, how they're going to contribute positively to your organization. This is a relationship, not a relationship. So, yes, exactly.
We're getting the explicit label today, guys.
Yep.
It's unfortunate how many vendors have gone that route of only reaching out to their partners when it's a month out or less from their renewal.
From renewal.
Right? And not having that regular cadence. It needs to be, if it's not quarterly, right, and you want to do it more aggressively and do it monthly, great. But it needs to at least, at the very least, be a quarterly review of that partnership. What is being done well and what is not? And I would hope that the vendors are being realistic about their shortcomings as well, right? Where they may be dropping the ball, or, you know, in turn also where your team might be dropping the ball in helping them provide the best performance. Because
yes.
that happens too. It's partnership, right? Work together, be honest, fail forward, back to the original.
Hey, LJ, how many talks at conferences have you given on AI this year?
Oh my goodness. I actually have no idea. It's been so many.
Oh God. And how many times have you taught this AI to supercharge your desk course already?
Over 2 dozen times now.
2 dozen? God, you were at 8 the last time I asked you, like a month ago. Good Lord.
I know. It has been exceedingly popular and it's gotten rave reviews. So we're super excited about what I think is going to be the leveling the playing field, the great equalizer. Is generative. And, you know, I've been quoted as saying, AI won't replace you, but someone that knows how to use it will. And so you need to get on it if you have it.
That's right, guys. So check out the Supercharger Desk with AI that Lauren is teaching via Leap Consulting. And you can find her at Lauren at leapconsultingsolutions.com.
Due to the fact that I am opening the show today, because Rob has this full-on New Jersey accent going thick today. Good morning to our listeners. Welcome to the YOE podcast, where we're going to have coffee. We're going to talk.
I'm very Long Island of
Jones.
How the hell are you?
How the hell are you, Rob? Welcome to our podcast today. It's Jersey
Guys, we've got a wonderful show for you today. We're going to connect with my roots. We're going to have a guy from Jersey on. Mr. Adam Butera, Director of Product at Opus Match. Adam, how the hell are you?
Lovely to be here.
I appreciate you not mimicking our stupid accents.
I couldn't resist. It was just too much Jersey before we hopped on and got live.
Guys, I don't know if you know this, but I often refuse to say the letters ER in conjunction together. I usually just make them an AH.
Water.
For instance,
would like to have some water. Yeah. And some butter.
I don't believe in ERs, guys. I don't know what to tell you. Anyway, guys, we're super excited to have Adam on. Adam has been a friend for a number of years now before he joined forces with the AI nerds, the matching nerds over at Opus Match. So shout out to some of our favorite nerds over there.
Yep.
Shout out to our friendship. Appreciate you guys over the years. Awesome friends, awesome colleagues.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you were doing some great stuff over at your previous staffing company and that lead health travel place, some good people over there as well. So we like hanging out with good people. We do have as much as possible, and we do enforce the no dick rule in our lives. So if you're going to be a dick, we're going to remove you from our lives pretty quickly. as fast as possible.
We have an aversion. Yeah, it's an allergy.
We're not a big fan of that. So we like good people, and you definitely are one of them. But I just figured it'd be funny, you know, throw that out there today live and on the show. But Adam, let's get to know Adam.
All right.
So Adam, you want to go first, Lauren? Okay.
Yes. Adam, give us a book or podcast recommendation. Something that you're reading and or listening to right now that you're super into.
That's a good one. So what I'm listening to right now, actually a podcast, is a book called How to Be a Modern Samurai. Recommendation that I recently reread that I would highly recommend to everybody is a book called Switch. It's a really great book about how to kind of organize and think through change management. Changed my perspective on how it should be done and the, you know, simple ways that we can trick our brains or help trick other people's brains and coach them towards, you know, better processes. So I'd highly recommend that one. I just recently reread that.
Ooh, I love like it.
That. I want to send me the link for Modern Samurai though.
We'll do.
Very
that's
fun.
That's been a fun one. Yeah, it's a little
more fun, I'm sure.
More leisure. Yeah. That's like my plane read.
Is it like a tongue-in-cheek kind of funny? Like about
no, it's actually more of a like compilation of all of these Japanese principles and histories all compiled together in a, you know, applied to modern kind of topics and worldviews, but it's done in a way that is very high level, right? So it does get granular with some details, but for the most part, it's fairly high level. So I've always just been interested in Japanese culture. And so it's aligned with, again, more of a leisure.
It's not recommending like Sapporo.
No, not. But it does recommend Japanese gardening.
Ooh, I like that.
Oh, I'm down for that.
All right.
But I will say this. I had the awesome opportunity of watching Dan Heath speak, and he's pretty flippin' amazing. Flippin' amazing. That brother duo in their books, I think, are phenomenal. I think I've read every single one of them. I'd be surprised if I've missed one. So if you haven't done Upstream... or The Power of Moments. They're pretty awesome. If you like Switch, you're gonna love the other one. Decisive, like they're really good writers, but B, they've just put out some tremendous content.
It's hard not to at least have one or two of their books on your reading list, past or future, right?
Yeah. Yes. I do have a signed copy of Switch, just gonna say that.
That's amazing. Now I'm super jealous if I wasn't already.
Just to be clear, I brought up a childish book and Lauren brought up the adult book to highlight. Just to kind of give you our personalities here. Adam, I'm gonna ask the hard one first. Greatest failure in your career so far?
Oh.
We've reduced him to silenced.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about kind of overall, I think my greatest failure in my career so far was taking a job that required me to do This is going to sound horrible, but it's a choice I made, and it's a bad one in hindsight. Really, it should have been right in front of me, was taking a job with a company that was requiring me to do a 30-day on-site training while my wife was pregnant with our second child. And the training was out in California, and we live in Atlanta now. So it was just a horrible decision of mine to go and do that. I have the most incredible wife that would even say, go do it, take advantage of the opportunity. But it was just a terrible mistake to even consider.
I mean, so I'm leaving for
professionally,
like,
probably the worst thing I've done.
I'm leaving for 12 days and I feel bad, but it's mostly because there's multiple things on the West Coast that I don't feel like flying 4 hours home for.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that I like to take advantage of good opportunities that are in front of me, right? And not let obstacles get in the way, or kind of overthinking them if I really feel like this could lead to better things.
Right.
And sort of, you know, not really risk averse. And so I did take advantage of something, but again, this should have been not even on the table as a consideration given my wife's situation.
Right.
So I would say
lesson learned. Lesson
yes,
learned.
Yes. Again, shouldn't have had to be learned in hindsight, but that was probably my worst professional mistake. Other than that, right, I continue to make mistakes. I continue to make mistakes all the time in my professional career. Rob, honestly, I think that's a big part of it, is that whole failing forward philosophy, right? Making mistakes, being self-aware enough to know, and being...
I love making mistakes. I usually learn a lot.
Me too. Me too. So hopefully I'll probably make some more today.
No worries. First podcast. We're,
that's right.
That's right.
I'm happy to have you make mistakes with us, because I can edit them out. Don't you worry.
Yeah, bringing up that I fail at a lot of things on a podcast, probably another mistake that I'll regret.
It's not at all.
I
call myself the chief failure officer. I am here for failure. It teaches you more than oftentimes winning does. So
the only thing you need to be aware of is if your CFO is the chief failure officer. That kind of person shouldn't be the chief failure officer.
That is a bad idea. You're 100% right.
All right. 100% right all the time. 50% of the time. All right. Adam or Lauren, go ahead into the next one.
All right. So now let's talk about your greatest achievement. Well, let's hear about the good stuff.
You can say being on this podcast.
No, yes. You can't.
You know, the easy answer is being on this podcast.
Yeah,
taking advantage of this opportunity, right? You dangled and I had to jump on it.
I appreciate that.
I think, you know, probably most recently, it's been what I've accomplished here at Opus Match, you know, kind of shamelessly plucking some of the work that we did here. But, you know, in the 6 months that I was here initially, I just passed my 1 year anniversary, but in the 6 months I was here initially, we proposed and launched a proof of concept in 6 short months for productizing some things that we were doing that are hitting the market with a lot of big strides and some really interested parties and locked up contracts signed already for it. So it's been successful. So I'm pretty proud of that we were able to do that in a short period of time and have some prison success and some market fit there for it.
That's exciting. Awesome. That's really exciting.
All right. We'll go with the most controversial question.
It's so divisive.
Adam, are you a dog or a cat person?
I'm a dog person.
Hey!
A couple minutes ago, there was one of my two dogs sitting on the couch back there earlier. But yeah,
Lauren,
mainly just because my wife and one of my son are actually allergic to cats. Like, even if I wanted a cat, I couldn't have one.
There you go.
But I am a dog person.
There was a fearless cat facing down Layla today on our walk. And I really want Layla to like meet a cat up close and personal and get like smacked upside the head for being aggressive. But I didn't know if the cat was declawed. So I'm like looking for a cat that I know is declawed that will just beat my dog's ass for a second so she stops barking at cats.
They're out there.
I know.
They're out there.
They're out there for sure. And they're just waiting to slap your dog, I promise you.
I'm sure. Our friend's cat, and they have like a little like Havanese, and like the cat gets on its back legs and goes, like smacks the dog in the face when it gets too close just to mess with it. It's so funny to watch. So anyway. No issues with cats, but I'm definitely a dog person.
No, I don't either. I mean, I've actually had some really great experiences with friends that have had cats and really enjoy cats. I do. I would probably end up having one. My daughter would love to have a cat. It's her dream is to have a cat. If my son and wife were allergic, we'd probably have one.
So just so you know, Lauren shared a photo of her pet raccoon Nugget in a tree the other day. in her yard. And it was like, that's where raccoons belong. And then my brain was like, oh, well, this is Nugget, her pet. I was like, that makes
sense. Pet raccoon? I need to hear more about that.
So we are wildlife. We are wildlife rehabbers. So.
Ah.
Yes. So.
Climbing trees.
Yes. Yes. Climbing trees. We got to get their muscles big and strong and, you know, all that good stuff. So, yeah, they have tree climbing time and then they come back for dinner and, you know, totally
they have
normal.
Indoor sleeping quarters?
Do you make
sleeping outside?
That we have a big, big, you know, 30-foot place for them outside.
Lauren lives on a farm.
Yeah.
You know.
With a.
All right. Adam.
Yes.
She's got room. So guys, Adam's been in the industry for a while, obviously building product for the industry. When he wasn't building product at Opus, he was building the part of the tech stack over at a travel nursing firm. So very aware. He worked at Sense as well. So been in the industry, been having these conversations. So we wanted to pick his brain about Lauren and I's. Basically, we're going to focus like the whole conversation on optimization. But I want to be a little fun here, and I want to kick off like the serious part of this conversation by something that Adam and Lauren, like Lauren says this a lot. I don't know if you've listened to the podcast for a while. Lauren loves to ask, when did our customers, like our staffing customers, start to check our homework?
Uh-huh.
And the prep call, Lauren and Adam had a field day just kind of like being upset about this. So in the effort to start this with the emotional topic for Lauren and Adam, I want to start there today. So Adam, would you like to expand a little bit about what we mean by checking our work and then be as emotional as possible about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's ROI, right? It's how are you measuring success? And how are you telling your clients or potential clients even that they can, what metrics they should be measuring your success by, right? If they invest in your partnership, what will they see as a return? What will they get as far as value is concerned? And to this point, everybody's checking our work more thoroughly now. And I think they should be. I really do. I think this is where we started to get into this a little bit, you know, on our last call and our prep call was around, you know, I've certainly got feelings about how we should be doing this at an even more granular level than we've probably done previously, right? It's not as simple as I bought job ads from you and therefore I got this many applications, right? Everybody wants to lead to placements, but how do you attribute those placement increases that you may see in volume to one particular vendor or multiple vendors if you've got brand new technology starting? And so I think this is where we start to get into an interesting conversation around how are you measuring success and what are those outcomes that you're seeing? How do they relate to your operational processes, business processes, right? So that's
sure.
My perspective on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, the more we get technology engaged, right, the more we have to get pretty fastidious about the metrics that matter, right? We have to understand exactly the metrics that matter. Now, I get honked off because I think foundationally things started falling apart when we lost trust with a customer and they started checking. And what I mean by checking our work is, you know, submittals, right? We have a whole AI, we have a whole process, we have a whole VMS process. There's process for submittals. And I say, foundationally, why did we start doing submittals, right? Why did we do that? Why weren't we just, I remember the days because I'm that old, people, where a customer trusted me enough to send the best candidate that I thought would be aligned to their job opening, right? That's where that happened. Yeah. And so, but now, you know, things are different. We have more process in place. We have more rules. Customers want to see our top 3 candidates, but then we get into what are the metrics that matter. And source matters a ton, particularly when you have tools like Bismatch or the Source Breakers of the world, right? They're there now. And now we have to ask ourselves, do I care where the candidate came from 2 years ago, or do I care where the candidate came from yesterday? I care where the candidate came from yesterday. Well, that means that we now have different metrics that we need to look at, as opposed to just historical source data. We're now looking at daily source data, and we need to attribute if Opus Match was the one that was able to go out and re-engage the candidate, bring them back into said circle, and then get them on a potential submittal and or opportunity. We need to be able to have metrics that matter as it pertains to the most recent source. And I think I see a lot of agencies doing that wrong, right? They're just looking at historical source data, taking the original source as the source. Now that's one. The submittal is you know, I still think that there's been a tremendous amount of trust lost between us and the customer. We've got to do something. And I think that's another metric that matters that gets out of whack that we talk about in the pre-call, which is, are you looking at your sub to interview ratio?
Yep. Sub to interview, sub to hire, right?
Sub to hire, sub to interview. Like if you're at an 11 to 1, you're submitting 11 people to a one interview, or you're submitting 30 people, as in, you know, the VMS we know is a numbers game. And so you're just slapping candidates against the opportunity as fast as you can.
Anybody can just take them.
Anybody can just take. Yeah, it's just silliness. So I still think that we need tools that are going to help us whittle down the metrics that matter, help us get really good at reducing the transactions. So many transactions don't need to happen. The opportunity for the job and the candidate. And I think that's where there's so much noise and so much inefficiency.
Yeah. Yes.
Hey, Adam, I think, and I could do this, but do you want to give a little breakdown of what Laura was talking about? When we say, I lost my train of thought because I usually just answer the question, but now I'm forgetting what I want to say.
Answer.
Anyway. I had a couple things I wanted to clarify, right? Is like you have sub to interview, which you might have multiple issues there. One, you may not have qualified the job well enough.
That's right.
Right. That might be more for perm or for, you know, professional. If for like staffing, like commercial staffing, if you go to 11 to 1, I've never done commercial staffing, Lauren. So I can't imagine that person trusts you anymore. And you can't get.
Well, you know what? This actually ended up being a client issue, right? This idea, and we've just fed the demon, right? That more is better.
Yeah.
And you know, I've said this before: more is not better; better is better, right? And
better is better.
It's coming back to your customer, remembering that we are consultants, and we come back to our customer and we say, look, the average candidate doesn't stay on the market for 30 days anymore, right? Yeah. We need to make sure that we're making expeditious decisions, which means that we can't be looking at a dozen candidates. We need to be looking at the top three candidates. In order for you to get the best candidate to match this job, we need to act with speed. And because it's a speed game today. And quite frankly, it doesn't matter what vertical you're in. It is still a speed game. Candidates want to know that they have control and they want to get their check they want to get their next check as soon as possible.
I remembered what I was going
to
ask Adam.
Oh my gosh. Give it to us, Rob. It's got to be good.
It wasn't that good. It was just, I completely forgot. So Adam, can you give some like a clarification on the source piece that mm-hmm. Lauren ran through? So like she was saying like legacy source versus submission source. I know that's something
most
that
recent or most
yeah.
recent.
Yeah. More recent.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to get like the legacy sources being, you know, maybe you posted a job ad 2 years ago with a Monster, Indeed, CareerBuilder, or somebody, and they applied to that job and ended up in your ATS, right? So that's that legacy source that she's referencing there. But then we've got all these incremental sources that are happening due to touch points, right? Whether it's an Opus Match that's doing a match and presenting that internally to your team or presenting that externally to the candidate that they're responding to through an engagement, right? Or these passive engagements that you're setting up through a Born Automation or a Sense, right, to go out and engage with them. And now they're reinvigorated and they're moved back into the top of the funnel. All of these little incremental elements should be attributed as an additional source, right? We need to be tracking them. We need to be showing data around how they've moved the needle there for you. So you can fully understand that kind of holistic view and life cycle of each particular candidate to see who's making an impact and who's not.
Yeah.
And really judge them on how big the impact really is. What is moving the needle? Is it moving the needle far enough? Right.
Yeah, I think traditionally in, you know, some of the ATSs that we work with, they don't do a great job of tracking all of that easily.
No.
And as we get to this phase where, you know, it's kind of like that attribution of the current, like we call it like the attribution of the most recent submission, right? So like, okay, you paid for this candidate to get in the database 2 years ago. It's in there. Now, how do we see all of the nurturing stuff that happened? And then how do we make sure that we know the triggered event, like the event that actually worked 18 months later, 24 months later, to actually get this person to the state of submittal? We need to see all of that. And we kind of need to see it in a holistic way.
Yeah.
At least I think we do.
I want to be able to see. Yes, I want to be able.
Question, by the way, she always has opinions.
I know. I know. You know what opinions are like, and everyone's got one. So, yes, I have an opinion on this. I think. Now I totally lost my train of thought because the dogs.
Are going crazy behind Lauren, guys.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Up and down on beds.
I know.
They're having a great time back there.
Yeah, they are. So source data, why is this so important? So we need to be able to establish ROI to the vendor. Every vendor that you have should be on a report card. And if you don't have a report card, we have one at Leap. But every vendor should be on a report card. And every vendor that you work with should be able to answer this question. What metric do you move? If they can't answer it, run. Run far away.
That's a good question. Time to ask Adam. Do you guys have a report card or at least some ideas of what you... I think you know what you move, so it's not
You
really
know what metric you move.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah,
I mean, it crossed the board in quite a few areas, but I think one of the biggest is that speed to submission.
Speed to submission, right?
Yep, that's a big
so
one.
Speed to submission, which equates to time to fill, which time to fill, impacts revenue. So, and it impacts quality. It could also potentially impact retention. So there are a number of metrics that you are applicable to your vendors. And if your vendor doesn't know what metric that they move, wrong vendor. And why do I say that? Why I know that's an aggressive stance to take because they need to be able to help understand the return on investment. And what you want to establish is a proper return on investment for each vendor so that essentially each vendor is paying for itself. That's where you want to get with the vendors that you're managing, is that they are contributing to the organization in a monetary way, and that monetary way is trackable. And that's why metrics matter so much with vendor partners.
I agree. I think the trackable piece too, that's where I would lean on your vendors as well. I wouldn't just want to know what metric are you going to move? What are you going to impact the most? But I'd also want to hear from them exactly how I'm supposed to track that. Mm-hmm. What things and tools do I need in place? What data do I need to be looking at, right? How often do I need to be looking at it to evaluate it so that I can make sure that they're providing the return that they are expected to provide, right?
And it's okay to challenge your vendor and say, can you help me? Can you help me report on that? Can you help me see the ROI each month? Can you send me a report? Do you have a dashboard? Do you, at the very minimum, I'd want to have a monthly report. But if they've got, an engaged dashboard, that's even better.
Even better. Even better. And if you've got, some sort of BIs that you've built, some Power BI tools that you've built internally, I'm sure most of your vendors can probably even help you in those areas as well to give you some raw data around things like that to maybe expand even beyond what they built out in a dashboard, right? Because you're doing a little bit of legwork for them to help prove out their own products, right? So I think it's another great opportunity you can capitalize on with them. Get collaborative. To your point, challenge them and get collaborative. Figure out what's the best way to measure this for that from their perspective? Or better yet, in an ideal state, how would they like to be measured?
Yeah, I mean, that all comes back to this whole constant evaluation, right? What tools are helping you move the needle? And those are the ones that you want to prioritize continued investments in. And that's why it's so important. And I'll say this, and I know I've said it once, so I'll say it again. You have to have a regular cadence with your vendor partners. It's a partnership. It should be a long-term partnership. That's why it's so important that, you know, you understand who they are, the metric that they move, how they're going to contribute positively to your organization. This is a relationship, not a relationship. Yes, exactly.
We're getting the explicit label today, guys.
Yep.
It's unfortunate how many vendors have gone that route of only reaching out to their partners when it's a month out or less from their renewal.
From renewal.
Right? And not having that regular cadence. It needs to be, if it's not quarterly, right, and you want to do it more aggressively and do it monthly, great. But it needs to at least, at the very least, be a quarterly review of that partnership. What is being done well and what is not? And I would hope that the vendors are being realistic about their shortcomings as well, right? Where they may be dropping the ball, or, you know, in turn also where your team might be dropping the ball in helping them provide the best performance. Because that happens too. It's a partnership, right? Work together, be honest, fail forward, back to the original.
I've been on both sides where I've been a terrible customer. You know, I've been a terrible customer. I haven't communicated. You know, you don't want to get to a QBR and lambast your partner, right? If you've gotten to that point and they don't know, they're not prepared for whatever is not going right, you've done yourself a disservice to the partnership. So, you know, I've been in that position before where I've been a terrible customer and I haven't communicated, and, you know, sometimes it's because of time, sometimes it's because of resources. It really doesn't matter. With digital transformation must come to structural transformation. You have to dedicate the resources to ensure that we're managing vendors appropriately. And that's including managing ourselves appropriately. Adoption is one of those things. If we're implementing something like Opus Match, it is incumbent upon me as the customer to put just as much effort in ensuring that I get adoption.
It's absolutely true. And here, I've heard it countless times, right, from just people in our space too. They almost get a little bit jazzed. Oh, I'm firing this vendor. They did nothing for me. I've already hired a new one. Did you tell them yet? No, not yet. But then there's this sort of, okay, you're excited about it, but isn't that a failing of yours that you've had them for almost a year now and you've never had a conversation about how you could potentially not fail in your investment? I mean, that seems like it's equal shared responsibility there for performance and success.
If you hire people and they fail and they're on your team, you are partly responsible.
Exactly.
Or mostly responsible for that failure.
Exactly. So why are our vendors any different?
Correct. Same thing. So maybe this is a good segue to talking about the word of the year, Lauren.
Optimization.
Yep. And how we can use all kinds of new things and metrics that matter and all this good stuff to make sure that we are optimizing. Because again, I don't necessarily know people are, and Adam, you might know differently. I don't know if they're spending a ton of money on new software, or lots of them are, maybe the bigger ones are, but there's lots of room to improve what you're already doing.
Yes. I think this is the opportune time now to improve what you're doing, right? I mean, I hesitate to use the buzzword of our time in AI, right? But there's an opportunity here really to take advantage of everything that's in front of you. Be realistic and self-aware enough to know what you do well, what you don't do well, and capitalize on those technology partners that are out there. There's a lot of great people that are doing great things in their respective spaces, right? Whether it's, you know, chatbots or engagements or data platforms, right? There's all of these great tools out there right now for you to take advantage of and re-optimize, right? And I know everybody's a little scared of AI right now, but from my perspective, I'm one of those, you know, hopeless optimists, but also I see a lot of optimism in this as far as our true ability to get to a point where, you know, we get more work-life balance back because we can automate and optimize some of the administrative tasks that we all deal with. And so I think that's a big area where instead of the traditional model of just hiring more recruiters or just hiring more salespeople to grow your business, right? We look at how can we actually streamline and become more efficient? How can we set our teams up to be more relationship managers instead of sourcers? from the recruiting perspective, right? So all these ways, I think that we should be looking to shift our mindset around this optimization internally. But I go back to, you know, what are you doing well? What are your core values as a company? What do you want to focus on? And then how can you get better outcomes in those areas? And there are tons of things, right, and opportunities to take advantage of there.
Love it.
Just come back to data. How are you tracking it, right? What are you looking at for those metrics? Always comes back to data, right? But even in that, there's opportunities to optimize and to clean up, you know, some daunting databases I've seen out there. I go back to, again, what are you good at? Or what are the metrics that matter to you from an operational perspective, right? What are those key areas in your AGS that are the most important data points for a candidate profile? Start there. Clean those up. Structure those so you're maintaining hygiene moving forward, right? That's just one simple way that you can optimize around what you're doing and then be prepared for what's to come. I think there's a certain amount of flexibility that has to stay too. You've got to kind of scale, but still somehow remain flexible for all the changes that are still coming. Because I think we've sort of just scratched the surface and opened the door. I mean, staffing especially, I'm saying this as berating myself in this because I've been a part of this industry for so long that we've done a horrible job of modernizing and transforming digitally, right? So now that we're finally embracing that, we can look to the outside world and these other places to see what they're already doing very effectively and successfully and adopt some of that for ourselves, right? We're that far behind. Most of the stuff has been proven in some cases that we can just start to follow those paths of success, right? And then brace for what's coming.
Yes.
Yep. I just so we're all aware, that's Delilah.
That is Delilah.
Hi, Delilah.
Is officially getting birthed by Lauren. Delilah's a dog, by the way.
Old habits, I hired moms.
Adam, I think you're 100% right, though. I think that, you know, starting at the basics and with your data is a good base level to start at. I think a lot of people are maybe unclear about the value that can be derived kind of like downstream, but almost like a waterfall. If you have a healthy relationship with your business's data, especially on the revenue generation side of it, obviously you should have a healthy understanding of your financial data. Especially if you're a leader and that's your job is to, you know, make sure the business has the money to do what the business needs to do, pay all the people, you know, pay all the bills. And, but I think getting really healthy with your relationship towards data as it pertains to, and I'll go back to this waterfall idea, right? Like if you have a culture built around good data in the ATS, there are lots of buckets that stop the leak, right? Whereas if you have unhealthy data, you get lots of drippy parts of the bucket that are eventually going to just take all the water out. And that is, you know, no contact details on a candidate or contact record, right? You know, people not using views, like saving the lists that they work with outside of your ATS, no matter what ATS you're on, right? Like if you're not like getting call lists in the ATS, you know, you're starting to leak. If you see your job board spend, I don't know, Lauren, you had some crazy job board spend number yesterday. I don't even want to repeat it. Lauren reported some company was spending way, 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 way too much money on a job board. And like, so like if you think about it as a leaky bucket, right? Like every time your data quality, your data governance falls apart, like there's more water just dripping out of that bucket. And it comes from adoption of the system, which has got its own cost suck to it. But also not using the system and spending more money on job boards, not being able to automate, not being able to leverage AI. Like these are all little drips, like little holes in the bucket that are turning into like pouring water out of your efficiency or optimization.
Yeah, paying an inordinate amount of money for job boards is usually symptomatic of another inefficiency problem. You know, I always say technology should be, you know, your second largest investment, second only to your people, unless you have real estate, obviously. But most firms today, their second largest investment is their tech stack. And I often see job advertisements competing with the cost of the tech stack. And that is, again, symptomatic of a larger inefficiency issue of the utilization of technology. And so that's just really what we have to be mindful of is, you know, what is a good balance of technology investment to revenue? What does that look like? There are stats out there. We have plenty of statistics and information out there so you can get healthy. Make sure you're not underinvesting, right? But there's also good information, good healthy information about the level of investment on your advertising or job advertising specifically. Anyway, 100%. Again, metrics that matter. Why source information is so important, right? Because if we're not tracking that, we don't know what does what, and we don't know what's contributing to time to fill and time to sub and all of those types of things. Then we just don't know who is actually contributing to the business.
Yes, exactly. And that's where, Rob, you touched on this too, right? I think we're now at a point where these little leaks are becoming big gaping holes, and they're also going to become real showstoppers when it comes to digital transformation and innovation. Because if you don't have clean data around some of these key areas, it's going to make it really hard for you to start to compete pretty soon using some of these key pieces of technology, because if they don't have clean data to work on, they're not going to work very well.
Yep.
You can't expect, you know, robots to talk to people or do whatever they're going to do if they don't know what to talk about, right?
Right.
Or who they're talking to.
Exactly.
Right. And so you don't get, just like we know with our humans that are talking to people, when the technology is engaging with people, whether it's on your website or an automation or an email and an SMS, right? You don't get a lot of chances at this. And it's your brand that's on the line here, right? To make sure that you're taking advantage of each one of those little opportunities. And I think everybody owes it to their brand to put the key piece of data in place and keep them hygienic. To your point, the ATSs can be used. They're there. They have the ways to standardize that moving forward and structure that in ways that it makes it impossible for your team to color outside the lines, right?
Yep. And with that nugget, and I think we can end right there. Like, just mic drop by Adam, and we just
mic drop. Yes, I love it. Leaving our listeners with golden nuggets of truth.
So if you didn't enjoy that truth bomb, maybe subscribe to a different channel. But Adam, I appreciate you. That was great.
Hey,
guys, we're gonna release this.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Here we go again. I can't escape. She does this every time, Adam. By the way, Adam's from New Jersey, guys. So,
sure.
Adam, you got a good Jersey accent now that you're in Atlanta for a long time?
I don't. Unfortunately, I think mine is pretty cliche, just like everybody else's at this point.
You want to know, removed. I didn't actually use this accent for years until Lauren got obsessed with the Italians and TikTok. And all of a sudden, the Italian-American in me had to come out. And I did not do this for a very long time, Adam. I've been very nice. All right.
Let me go grab some coffee.
You get the coffee. I get the donuts and the bagels. Oh, the bagels in Jersey are so good.
Yeah, and the bagels. I tell people all the time. There was
Italian
people's bakery, if you didn't know it, used to be the best. You get a free roll with butter with every cup of coffee in Trenton, New Jersey. It was amazing. Free roll with butter.
Oh, God. The Kaiser roll with butter?
Yes.
All right.
Thank
Adam,
you.
We'll see you. We're going to release this episode the week after Exec Forum, but we will probably see you next week, brother. So thank you.
Yes.
Thanks, Lauren.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the You Own the Experience podcast.
You can catch all our previous episodes at whyowepodcast.com and learn more about our thriving staffing community by signing up for the YOE newsletter.
And coming soon is Staffing Huddle, an online open community dedicated to your staffing success.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Lauren. Go do something good.